Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, June 13th. I'm Matt Harmon coming to you once again from the CondoCast here in Virginia Beach. Joining me on the podcast for his first edition of Flip the Script episode is the one and only Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. I'm doing well. Thanks to producer Colin for helping me get set up because my equipment's been a little bit testy today. So as I said to you guys, I'm going to follow up this production, this mediocre production on my end with some mediocre hot takes on this football program. Let's get to it.
Oh, well, beautiful. Hey, listen, it's minicamp season, Scott. So everybody's trying to figure things out. You're trying to figure your setup out. Teams are trying to figure their identities out. We on the outside are trying to figure out, are some players not going to be involved in the whole process? Is there going to be some kind of frostiness between players and teams? I wanted to run quickly three situations by you before we get to our Flip the Script episode that we have for the people today. First is Saquon Barkley. The Giants running back said over the weekend, quote, "I have a lot of respect in this league, and I think that's how I should be viewed." I don't think he's signed the franchise tender yet. There's definitely been no signs that a long-term agreement is coming there. The same is also true for fellow franchise running back Josh Jacobs of the Las Vegas Raiders, who tweeted out, "Sometimes it's not about you. We got to do it for the ones after us." A very cryptic tweet there from Josh Jacobs. And the third and final one is a non-running back, and I don't think necessarily fits into the discussion of, hey, we're running backs, we're getting boned, we're trying to not get boned right now. It's Buffalo Bills wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Strange order of events that literally unfolded like the last couple hours here as we were prepping for the podcast. Sean McDermott said on Tuesday that he's very concerned that Diggs is not at mandatory minicamp. Then Adam Schefter, right after that, tweeted out that Diggs's agent said that his client is in Buffalo, has been in Buffalo since yesterday morning, took his physical, has met with the head coach and the general manager the past 2 days, and the Pro Bowl wide receiver will, quote, be there for the entirety of minicamp. That third one seems like maybe nothing to worry about. It's just a little bit of an odd situation from a very, a self-admitted, very emotional player in Stephon Diggs. The other two, though, is part of a continuing conversation, Scott, where, you know, these running backs are not enjoying the fact that everybody is, devaluing the position at this point. Do any of these three stand out to you as something that we should be legitimately concerned about at this point?
I'm not ready to make any major ranking changes on any of these guys. And historically, if you were to fade all holdouts at this time of year, how many times would you have really regretted it, right? There was the year that Le'Veon Bell took some horrible advice from Le'Veon Bell and skipped a full season in the middle of his prime of his career. And you, when you're a running back, you don't have a year to waste. It's just, I think he probably regrets that, although who knows with Le'Veon Bell, the way he thinks through things. Vincent Jackson did sit out about three quarters of a season 1 year and then, you know, came back just to make sure the year counted against his tolling so he could get free agency and all that, the late Vincent Jackson. But I think Barkley's going to play. The one guy of the three, because Jacobs is just kind of a different kind of cat, I could see maybe Jacobs holding out, but I'm not ready to make an adjustment on any of these guys. I think the Diggs thing is probably just a big misunderstanding. And ultimately, Barkley's going to realize he just doesn't have a lot of leverage here. The franchise tag is still pretty good money. I mean, might as well. The Giants are moving in the right direction. They made the playoffs last year. Barkley and Diggs, I think, are going to be fine. If I had to pick one player here who I'm maybe just a trifle bit nervous about, it's Jacobs, but I haven't made any major ranking changes.
Yeah, I wouldn't make a single ranking change myself. I'm with you that I think, you know, obviously last time we saw Stephon Diggs with the Bills, he had to be kind of brought back into the locker room. He admitted that he is an emotional guy who cares about winning. I think there might be something going on there between player and team, but I doubt that it results in anything of consequence. Barkley, you know, he wants to be with the Giants. I think he just, like all these running backs, wants to be paid consummate to where he believes his value is, not where the market has sort of dictated it. And yeah, I'm with you that like you said, I don't know if concerned is the right word, but I'm going to at least keep my eye on Josh Jacobs because this was already sort of this relationship between the current Raiders brass and Josh Jacobs didn't necessarily get off on the right foot, right? When they declined his fifth year option, he ended up having a great year, but I guess if there's one guy I could see actually missing games, even though maybe that's like a 5% chance that happens, it would be Josh Jacobs. Also, maybe just because he has said that it's not about you, we got to do it for the ones after us, which whether you like, regardless of whether you think it was a good idea for Le'Veon Bell to do what he did seem to do it with that in mind, that he was going to reset things for running backs. I think it ended up doing more harm than good in the long run for running backs, but maybe Jacobs is of that same mind right now.
Right. And I always think it's great when players have an understanding of what came before them and what comes after them. And, you know, you go back to baseball, you know, what Kurt Flood gave up to and Andy Messersmith, you know, what he risked to give baseball players free agency. It wasn't that long ago generationally where, you know, the owners had all the leverage in baseball, and it's obviously changed. Now the players have plenty of agency. Football is the one sport of the four major sports where it seems like the players have the least amount of agency. And we know the careers more than any other sport. You can get hurt in any game. I mean, Tommy John surgery is never going to go away in baseball. And, you know, hockey, you're one hit away maybe from something that changes your career. But football, of all of them, the gravity of what these guys take from snap to snap is significant. So I respect that Jacobs is seeing outside the picture, bigger than himself. Also, remember too, and everybody's wired differently in what they're playing for. Diggs has to know Buffalo's window is right now, right? I mean, they want a Super Bowl really bad, and they have an AFC, of course, is loaded. It's no shame when you lose up to a Bengals or a Chiefs team or something like that. And you know, they played the best game of the league a year ago. I understand it, but I don't think this is the year to sit out a Buffalo season, right? This could be their Super Bowl season. And the Giants, you know, going the right way with a new coach. Daniel Jones seemed to be on the right path last year. I mean, there's exciting things happening with the Giants. With Jacobs, I could understand if he just said, in addition to whatever else is going through his mind, he thought, well, the Raiders don't really want me. We're going nowhere. We have 6-11 stamped on our foreheads right now. I mean, he might not say that in public, but it's not like he's missing out on the party that Stephon Diggs might be missing out on. It's not like he's missing out on another playoff spot, which the Giants plausibly could get. Right now, I would have to think the Raiders are probably the weakest roster in the AFC West.
Oh yeah, I think so too. And yeah, your great point about Diggs, like this is the window for Buffalo. Like, well, if you have Josh Allen, your window is probably going to be the entirety of Josh Allen's career. But for this current iteration of the Bills, probably the iteration that involves Stephon Diggs too, right? Because I think he turns 30 this year. He's 29 right now. You know, he's making $24 million a year. I think they just gave him a new contract last offseason or a couple offseason. Yeah, I think it was last offseason. But, you know, maybe he sees what's happening with DeAndre Hopkins right now, who's just a little bit in the same ballpark, a little bit older. You know, it's like, all right, well, I got to get my one last payday before I'm a guy that's looking, you know, like mercenary wise. Do I chase the bag or do I chase the ring in a couple off seasons? So, yeah, if I'm Sean McDermott, I'd be concerned that if there was even like a 1% chance Diggs is not all the way bought in or wants off the team there, I don't think they'd ever trade him. Their salary cap would be obliterated. But we talked a lot on the show. We just talked to Josh Allen on the show recently about all the questions beyond Stephon Diggs in the offense. So I think that's a worthwhile discussion there. But I'm with you. I think Jake.
Diggs also probably realizes that he's a borderline Hall of Fame guy. I think he's got certainly got a solid chance to make it, but he's no slam dunk at this point. What could push him over the cliff is maybe like not just a Super Bowl championship with the Bills, but maybe, you know, he ends up being the MVP of the game or he catches the game winning touchdown or something like that. That could be the difference between, okay, really, really close doesn't make it, really, really close does make it. And they understand that. That's how we keep score. That's why. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, John Stallworth is in the Hall of Fame, you know, in part because he's on those Steelers championship teams where some guys who have Hall of Fame stats and receiver, of course, you know, as the game has become more pass heavy, the stats that you put up get a little bit muted by the fact that so many other guys are putting up those video game stats too. I think Diggs is cognizant of all that. I said Jacobs, if I had to say one guy who I maybe had a little bit of pause, it would be Jacobs. The guy I'm least bit concerned about, I really think it's just a misunderstanding, is Diggs. I continue to draft him where you're drafting him. And honestly, I'm fine if you want to have Barkley at the top of your running back build. We know he goes really well with that hero build. You can get Barkley, then you start loading up the receivers. You'll go market and kind of inexpensive at running back later. I'm totally fine with that. So I guess the point would be green light on Diggs. I'm really close to green lighting Barkley. You know, maybe he's just like, you know, a green light minus, but he's really close to that. The yellow light player would be Jacobs.
Yeah, 4,189 yards, 29 touchdowns in 3 seasons with Buffalo for Stephon Diggs. That is like the meat of a Hall of Fame resume. And he does have the signature moment from when he was with the Vikings
against playoffs,
the
Saints.
But if he could get a couple of those on like a Super Bowl run, I think that's a great point. You know, it's interesting. I mean, I'd love to know just where his head's at. He's an interesting guy. Like I've said, you know, his Instagram, interesting place. His Twitter profile or his Twitter presence, interesting place. So anyways, we can move on to the meat of the show here today. We're now in the fourth installment of our summer series called Flip the Script. For the month of June, we've been going back and looking at the biggest surprises from last season, trying to predict who are going to be the biggest surprises this year. On this podcast today, Scott, we're going to try to identify, quote, this year's Eagles. And what we mean by that, it's a team that makes the leap from good to great. I'm spinning the clock back 365 days ago. You know, the Eagles were coming off a 9-8 year. They had made the playoffs, but they didn't look like really a true contender necessarily in 2021. That playoff loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in that year was rough, right? It was like, well, Jalen Hurts was immediately figured out by a good defensive coordinator, head coach, and eventual head coach in Todd Bowles. But they made some tweaks in the offseason. One of the biggest moves of the offseason, they bring in A.J. Brown. We know what happened from there. So, Scott, trying to find out this year's Eagles, I laid out three parameters for us here. Number one, we're looking for an objectively good team in 2022, but just shy of the elite tier. So no Eagles, Niners, Chiefs, Bills, Bengals. I don't think those teams really count. I also think they need to have made like at least one net positive move in the offseason. And three, they need to have like kind of, I think, a legitimate quarterback option. Maybe a guy that can take another step, but somewhere in a, like the legitimate quarterback range, they've got to have that guy. Because we all knew Jalen Hurts was like a legitimate starting level quarterback, I'd say, last year, but we didn't know that he would be the guy that he was this past year. And I would also say, too, like this has to be a team with a winning record in going from good to great. I know that's kind of an arbitrary cutoff, but, you know, we've talked enough about the Jets and the Commanders like making a leap on this show through Flip the Script. So I don't think those teams count. I think we're looking for one that had a winning record last year and could take that leap this year. What do you say? Does that all make sense?
It all makes sense. And that third prong, that the quarterback thing, is probably what keeps the Falcons out of this because they have such interesting skill talent. But Desmond Ridder, who knows? Maybe he can be a competent quarterback. I mean, maybe there's more ceiling here than I initially realized. But he's probably the reason why they won't qualify, even though we're all excited to draft a lot of players on this roster. At least I am. I'm still kind of figuring out if I can trust Arthur Smith again, who I was ready to follow him into a burning building when he was with Tennessee. And obviously A.J. Brown's career got started there and he steered into Derrick Henry. We had some good times. Ryan Tannehill had some fantasy relevance in Tennessee. They've become kind of a lost roster since then. But the Falcons are interesting to me. We won't talk about them on this show other than just a little aside. But again, that's probably because of Ridder. He doesn't qualify under that third tenant.
Yeah. Again, same is true with like the Jets, because they had a losing record. We know they're about to get elevated by a quarterback. We know that Washington, it's like, well, everything seems good there, but except the quarterbacks. We talked enough about those teams. So let's dial in on these ones here. Mm-hmm. Let's go in the AFC first, the good to great candidates. And let's start in the AFC East, where I think we can really circle in here on the Dolphins, a team last year, Scott, that was 9-8. We all know what derailed their season last year. It was the quarterback health. But I think we can all agree that Tagovailoa took a big step in terms of going from a guy that was sort of an unknown to a player that I think we know who he is now at this point. But is there more of a leap there? Is there more confidence around the team in general? How are you feeling about the Dolphins as a potential? And I should say, too, we're going to try to get down to three finalists here before voting on our pick. Do the Dolphins make sense as a potential finalist for this year's Eagles?
Oh, for sure. We're really looking for just two things. One is, and obviously, this overwhelms everything else with the Dolphins program. It's the health of Tua. Can he play a full season? And then can there be somebody who emerges from the running back room? This could be ultimately somebody they sign or they trade for. Maybe they're Dalvin Cook people. Maybe Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, something. I look at their depth chart right now. Raheem Mostert, nice player. Jeff Wilson, nice player. But those guys have limited upsides. Could they find a running back answer who could be an automatic starter, if not a running back one? We know their passing game has probably the two best tandem receivers in the league right now in Hill and Waddle. And it's so condensed. There's no tight end who's taking away stuff. Tua doesn't run all that much. So it really comes down to, and I feel like last year, the question was, how good is Tua? Can Tua play? We've answered that question. Now the question that overwhelms this program is, can Tua play a full season? And it's hard to know that. Health is sometimes just something you have to guess on. You get the whistle through the graveyard a little bit. But I have drafted proactively into Tua. in the, you know, the off season, the mocks, the magazine stuff and all that. And I'm going to continue to do that. And I'm going to try to link him up with one of his receivers. Unfortunately, I don't know who else you pair him with here. I don't see a third receiver who interests me. I don't see a tight end who interests me. But Hill and Waddle, man, the fact that they're both going to get like 155 targets right off the bus or something like that, I guess, give me all of those guys.
Yeah, they have Braxton Berrios on the roster. They also have the artist formerly known as Robbie with a Y, then Robbie with an IE, Chosen Anderson, as he's going by now. They obviously don't have much at tight end. So I'm with you that they're the team that I think makes the most sense for Dalvin Cook. They're the team all offseason I wanted to see him at a big time running back, because in addition to Tua staying healthy, I also think that they could really use a consistent counterpunch to the offense that they were in the early part of last year. You know, they sort of got stuck in the mud a little when teams pressed the hell out of the receivers. Not that Jalen Waddle's bad against press coverage, or Tyreek Hill certainly not bad against press coverage, but it disrupted the timing a little bit. And then, yeah, if they had a great running game, I think that'd be an awesome kind of counterpunch. But as much as I think Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson can give you good chapters, as exciting as Devon Achane is, like having one big time running back like a Dalvin Cook, if he has one more good season in him, would be an awesome counterpunch here. But so you think they do make sense as a top three finalist for next year's Eagles, at least?
Certainly in the conversation. I'll reserve the right to pick my final three after we go through all these teams. And I will say that I'm not going to give it away. There's one team that I thought when this subject was approached, one team I thought was the slam dunk right answer to it. We'll see. I'm not going to say who that is. It's actually not the Dolphins, but man, it's so simple with Miami. If you could tell me I'm from the future and Tua plays 17 games, I'm going to be so overweight on the Dolphins.
I know obviously this is a fantasy podcast. You guys obviously talked a lot about the offense, but I do think one of the parameters you mentioned at the top, Harmon, is a net positive in this offseason and hasn't been mentioned yet about the Dolphins. Maybe almost forgotten because it happened so early. But the addition of Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator and Jalen Ramsey at corner. And look, that's a formula, right? Because you need, I think the fundamental question you guys have to ask yourselves is, can this team beat the Bengals, the Chiefs, the Bills in a playoff game? And I look at this defense, I think they can't. I think Jalen Phillips is a rising star at edge. Javon Holland, a rising star defensive back to pair with Jalen Ramsey and Xavier Howard. This is a top five potential defense to bring that to the table.
No, it's a really good point. And in a weird way, Brian Flores also goes to the Vikings. They're sort of kind of taking the scheme that Minnesota did not run really well last year and bringing it to Miami this year, just because Ed Donatell was a offshoot of that tree as well. And then on the flip side, the scheme that Miami did not run that well last year from the Josh Boyer, I believe, was the defensive coordinator left behind by Brian Flores. They're bringing that to Minnesota. So it's kind of funny that they're switching things up a little bit there, but that's a great point too, Colin, that they belong in that discussion too, because their defense could go from a liability at times last year to potentially a really good strength here. Cause Vic Fangio was kind of one of the biggest additions of the offseason. He could be the AJ Brown of this discussion here. So let's go to another AFC team, and we are going to put the Dolphins as a finalist for now. But as Scott said, we reserve the right to change that later on. AFC West, I think the team that qualifies here is the Los Angeles Chargers, who were 10-7 last year. I mean, in a similar fashion, Scott, right? It's like if you could tell me that everybody on the Chargers stays healthy, if you come from the future and let me know that, I feel really good about the Chargers being involved in this discussion here. But beyond just having their guys stay healthy, what else has to happen for the LA Chargers to make an Eagles type leap here in 2023?
Yeah, I want to see one of the young receivers take a step forward. We know they have an old receiver. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are good players, but they're probably on their back nine and they're at ages where we start to get a little bit concerned. And you mentioned Herbert. I mean, he was hurt. He got hurt early in last season. He played through the injury, but his stock took a step back. I mean, it used to be like, oh, ha, ha, ha. Remember when Miami took two over Justin Herbert? Wouldn't they love to have that back? That's an open question again. I think it's still in the reasonable range of outcomes that we can look back and say Tua had the better career than Herbert if he manages to stay healthy. Herbert, maybe a month into the season, that the narrative is, oh, remember when Justin Herbert was the forgotten about? He was no longer the kind of the new kid in town, the hot little item. And we took a step back from Herbert and he reminded us he could still be like an MVP candidate type of player. I don't know. You can probably speak better to me about Quentin Johnson, Joshua Palmer, Jalen Guyton. If there's a third pitch in this passing game, because I really think they need it. I mean, they're such a slow team, right? They've lacked so much team speed that I would love to see somebody who can just stretch defenses. I don't know if this guy, if any of these guys can be that player. We know Austin Eckler is a wonderful fantasy player and a really good podcast host as well. They have quality tight ends. They're not going to have a top five tight end, but you know, Everett and Parnum are perfectly reasonable. It just comes down to, is Herbert healthy, and can they find a field stretcher from one of their young receivers?
Yeah, I think Quentin Johnson could be that guy. But I also think if he takes a minute to get acclimated to the NFL game, that's not going to be surprising considering the offense that he played in. And he's a guy that, you know, was great after the catch in college, but had questions as a contested catch guy. You know, there were other players I certainly liked better than him. Like if Josh Palmer is playing over Quentin Johnson in September, that's not going to take me by a ton of surprise, but it's like Josh Palmer is a decent little player, but he contributes to the problem of being too slow and being sort of like overlapping with the other guys. I think if they have Mike Williams and they have Keenan Allen, and yeah, they get like moments from Quentin Johnson, they get moments from Jalen Guyton or Josh Palmer, I think that's enough, because I still think Keenan Allen's got enough left of his game and Mike Williams is what he is. Like, that's fine. I think we forget that like Justin Herbert had 5,000 yards and 38 touchdowns in 2021. He was awesome that year, right? Like, I think that we could easily be having the conversation midseason, Scott, about, hey, like this is a guy that's taken a leap into, like, I don't think you can consider him in, I mean, nobody is in the Mahomes tier, but like in the tier with Josh Allen and Joe Burrow right now. But if he's in that conversation by like October, I'm not going to, I mean, that would make total sense to me, because I think he's that good. And, you know, a lot of this comes down to, what is Kellen Moore going to bring to the offense as the play caller? Because, you know, just anybody watching this Chargers offense last year, in addition to the personnel problems, there was certainly like a roof that had been put over the offense, weirdly, by the offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi, despite the fact that, like, you know, they had a Ferrari there in Justin Herbert, and they were basically just driving it around the block.
Yeah. They're getting a new voice in the huddle, or, you know, through the headset anyway, at a good time. Also mentioned as quirky of a factor as this is, I feel like I've spent a lifetime, in my fantasy lifetime anyway, having optimism on the Chargers, and seldom as a team been paid off. So yeah, maybe this, wouldn't it be funny if this is the year I kind of pulled back from that? Like, okay, I'm sick of saying the Chargers are going to win the AFC. I'm sick of saying this is the year they're going to go 13-4, or, you know, back in the day, 12-4. I always felt like they were just one step away from doing that. And it's been, that optimism has never been rewarded for me, but maybe Moore will whisper the right things. Maybe they just need some health luck, right? Because last year they just didn't have any of it. And the fact that we have to keep in mind, Herbert has to get a pass for playing hurt the entire season. Right. That fact can't be minimized. But the problem is that when you have an old receiver room like this, I think you have to bake in some missed time. And we think about, look, every running back's projection shouldn't be 17 games. When you draft a higher end receiver, you hope he'll play the whole schedule. I think you probably have to bake in some missed time for the two top Charger guys.
Just watching Kellen, as he evolved as an offensive coordinator in Dallas, the frustration, or I think, and this kind of plays with the Chargers, there can be a very high variance. Like, he can have a very high ceiling and have a phenomenal game where everything clicks and Herbert throws, you know, 40 times for 400 yards and 40 points. And then there are games where, you know, they go up against better competition, or I could see a game where they're in Kansas City and they can't move the ball the next week and score 10 points. I think that's the frustration, is that Kellen Moore's offense can have a very high ceiling. It can also have a very low floor. So that is something that I think Chargers fans should prepare themselves for, because that's what I saw in Dallas the last 4 years.
Yeah, he's a guy that we don't really know about either, Kellen Moore, because we've seen him under Scott Linehan, and then we've seen him, or, you know, under Jason Garrett, and then they kept him around. And then, like, how much of the offense is Mike McCarthy last year? How much of it is Kellen Moore? I think that's like an open question. And, you know, there was definitely sometimes, Colin makes a great point about the Cowboys offense. It's like, okay, are they going to open this thing up all the way? Or are they just going to run a bunch of stick routes, a bunch of curl routes, like a bunch of little hitches and stuff? But you know what? They were doing that in LA last year with the Chargers. But again, is it a personnel thing? Is it a coaching thing? That's kind of an open question. And really, like, we're having this discussion about the offense. You know, Brandon Staley is a defensive head coach, and this, on paper, this defense is kind of troubling. Like, there are definitely some clear holes here. You know, they spend all that money on JC Jackson, and, like, you know, where's he at from an injury perspective? You know, what's going on there? Like, do they really have, beyond Joey Bosa, who has health questions himself, do they have like another pitch from a pass rushing standpoint? Their biggest defensive addition this offseason is Eric Kendricks, you know, from the Minnesota Vikings. He's on his second act. So I don't really know that I have a ton of faith in this defense being that great either, even though that's Brandon Staley's specialty, which I can kind of go back and forth on, Scott, because, okay, Brandon Staley should be able to coach him up on that side of the ball and like just spend all your resources trying to outscore Kansas City and Buffalo. And I don't know. Do you feel the Chargers belong in the finalist group this year? Like, I go back and forth, and if I would prefer Miami or LA, like, I think they're very equal in terms of this spot.
I'm not going to put the Chargers in the finalist group, but I will say this. It's a catch 22 with the strength of a defense. We talked earlier about Miami, how good the defense could be. And obviously Philadelphia was the best fantasy team last year and they had a tremendous defense, but maybe if you draft Justin Herbert, maybe you want that defense to collapse and be 26th in DVOA and the Chargers to be play a bunch of 35-31 games, a bunch of shootouts. Maybe that would be better served for Charger fantasy value. On one hand, you want to have leverage, right? You want to be able to call what you want, not what you have to want. You don't want the game situation to make you one dimensional. But yet, if you're chasing the game a lot, if you're in a lot of high scoring games, if you fall behind and you have to throw 45 or 50 passes, you just get more snaps off. Your offense has more volume. We know how fantasy fruitful that can be. So if I draft Herbert and the defense collapses, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And I will say too, just because I know some people get irritated with the Herbert, like a lot of Herbert enthusiasm. He's definitely got to make a couple of tweaks his own as a player. Like, his clock is too fast sometimes. He gets to that, as much as we love Austin Eckler checkdowns, he gets to that checkdown too fast sometimes. And I know Eckler feels the same way too, right? He said a lot of times in the program last year, I don't want to be catching 100 balls. I want wide receivers to catch balls because they go downfield, you know, stuff like that. So there's definitely some open questions with the Chargers. And I agree that they're sort of similar with me in terms of the Dolphins. I feel like they're equal, but I'm going to move them out of this conversation as well. Let's go to the AFC North, where there are two teams I think that make sense for this. The Baltimore Ravens certainly should be involved in the discussion. 10-7 last year. They make some tweaks that I think could easily end up by the end of the year looking like the exact thing they need in terms of Todd Monken, some of the receivers that they add. I think this was the time to move on from Greg Roman. But I also, Scott, think, like, call me crazy, but I think the Steelers should be involved in this conversation too. 9-8 last year. We know Mike Tomlin always has them above 500. They didn't necessarily make like one big look. They traded for Allen Robinson, huge consequential move there. But they didn't necessarily make that one big move, like an AJ Brown type of thing, but they have a quarterback who could take the leap in Kenny Pickett. So I wanted to include them in this conversation, even if on paper, the Ravens certainly make more sense. How are you feeling about these two AFC North teams?
I don't include the Steelers, although I'm kind of a Steelers sympathizer. I'm a George Pickens fan. I think Pat Freiermuth is becoming a really interesting value tight end. Najee Harris is just going to be on volume, a really valuable fantasy running back, because people just aren't going to want him. They're going to go, oh, Najee Harris, who's he? He's just a guy. Well, he's Pittsburgh's guy. He'll get volume. I just don't know that Pickett has the ceiling for me to think about this year's Eagles. I mean, he's not going to have like a quasi MVP season. I just don't think it's in him, especially in his second season. When this exercise was introduced to me, my first thought was like, of course it's the Ravens, right? Lamar Jackson's already had, you look at their depth chart, okay? It doesn't take a big leap of faith to imagine Lamar Jackson, number one quarterback, or Mark Andrews, number one tight end. Heck, Justin Tucker, we're not here really to talk about kickers. He's the best kicker I've ever seen. And I'm a Patriots fan, remember? Adam Vinatieri is, you know, part of my DNA. And we want to see J.K. Dobbins another year removed from a major injury. And we talked about, well, what have they done to improve their team? If they can sell Odell Beckham on a secondary role as, you know, kind of that second half of DeSean Jackson's career, you're clearing out, you're making things better for other guys, you occasionally have a big game, but it's not all about you. If Beckham can handle that, look at this depth chart. Rashad Bateman, Odell Beckham, Zay Flowers, even Devin Duvernay is kind of a gadgety guy and maybe a return guy, somebody who can play in a pinch. This is a really, really fun offense. I'm just going to spoiler. I know we're supposed to, you know, big finish at the end. When we were first talking about this, my first thought was, of course it's the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm with you that I wanted to mention the Steelers because I think they could take a leap this year, but it's like two leaps for them to get to this year's Eagles thing. I think maybe if we're running this series back next year, maybe the, you know, whoever this year's whatever, it becomes the Steelers. I think maybe Kenny Pickett takes that step. I'm with you that I've got my questions about George Pickens' game, but I do think he's a good quality starting NFL X receiver. You know, I'm a big Deontay Johnson fan. I do think Robinson's going to bring them something as a big slot there that they were missing.
You're
going to
die on that hill. You're going to die on the Allen Robinson hill, man.
I'm not saying he's going to be like a 1400, you know, yard receiver or anything. But I do think he could be a useful player for them this year.
I'm surprised that Pickett's ceiling didn't disqualify him from this thing. And let me ask you this. We just saw Deontay Johnson set history, right? He had an 147 target season and didn't score a touchdown, which is remarkable. I think he might have had a 2-point conversion or two. And those, so at least he's been in the end zone and caught a football. That's nice. The two previous seasons, he had 8 and 7 touchdowns, which is perfectly reasonable. So this is the SAT question. 7 touchdowns, 8 touchdowns, 0 touchdowns. Where should we put our touchdown expectation for Deontay? And by the way, when it comes down to it, would you rather draft Deontay Johnson or George Pickens this year?
I think it's Deontay, and I feel really comfortable about that. I just think I know who he is as a player. And yeah, usually, Scott, I love the SAT framing there. The next answer is not zero again. It's like 6, right? I think if you were saying, you know, 7, 8, 0, 6, like I think that perfectly makes sense as a reasonable projection. But if Deontay is going to continue to get the volume that he's gotten, and by the way, there's no reason he won't get that same, you know, target share because he's the same player. I think Pickens can take a step, but like the questions about Pickens' game are much more drastic than the questions about Johnson's game. Like you definitely can nitpick Deontay Johnson. I have as like the, hey, get upfield, pal, stop losing yards after the catch. But the route running, the separation, like that's what gets you that incredible level of volume that he's gotten. So I do find myself like really wanting to draft Deontay Johnson this year as a bounce back candidate. Love his skill set.
The thing that frustrates me about Johnson is when you say to me, okay, Deontay Johnson, just imagine in your mind a play that he makes. I think of him catching an 8-yard pass on 3rd and 7. It's perfectly nice. The chains have been moved, but it's not a play that you'll remember when the game ends. And also, as much as we're talking about these receivers here, I can't shake the idea that at the end of the year, their touchdown reception leader is going to be Pat Freiermuth.
Oh, 100%. And by the way, we're talking about all of this still within the context of a Matt Canada offense. As I've said on the podcast a ton of times, like he designs my least favorite offense. So we'll have plenty of time to talk about the Steelers, who I do think are a fascinating team to talk about in the offseason this year, because I do think they could be much better than expectation. I'm interested really just in this entire division, but they don't really qualify for this exercise. So on the Ravens, you know, you mentioned the Odell Beckham thing. I think we've already seen Beckham accept that kind of role with the LA Rams. Now that was a team that was obviously in the middle of a Super Bowl run, but we know that their world revolved around Cooper Kupp. But then there were times, and you know, Kupp has said this, that in the Super Bowl, the game plan was designed around Odell Beckham as the backside X receiver in that offense. So, but not everything was revolving around Odell Beckham that year. So I think he could be that type of, obviously health withstanding, that's the big question mark. We're dealing with another, you know, injury comeback. If he can be that, I think he can be that guy for the Ravens. And then I still love Rashad Bateman. I think we've seen great stuff from him. We just haven't seen it consistently over an entire season because of health. Love Zay Flowers. You know, the defense has its questions, but still, I think we generally feel good about that side of the ball for the Ravens. You know, J.K. Dobbins was super efficient when he came back the second time last year after, you know, a stint on IR. He could take another step as a player. I'm with you that I think the Ravens have to be a finalist. Whether they end up being, you know, my pick here, I think they have to be one of the top three finalists for this.
And there's one other piece we haven't mentioned yet, which is Todd Monken takes over the offense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I know that people, we're talking a lot about the Ravens. People that have listened to this podcast have heard me talk about my enthusiasm for the Ravens offense. So I won't fight you on this one, Scott.
One red flag just before, because I completely agree with you guys. I think the Ravens deserve to be finalists. They did lose quite a bit of their pass rush production. Houston and Campbell are out. Jason Pierre-Paul even are out. So, and I think Tyus Bowser too. So where is the pass rush coming?
They always find some like mercenary to come, you know, do that. Justin Houston was that guy.
Jadeveon Clowney still available or did he sign?
I mean, probably. I think he is, right? Like they'll pick up some edge rusher that'll get like 8 to 9 sacks for them. That's just like what they do. That is some classic Ravens stuff. Let's move to the AFC South, Scott. Jags here. I think they make a ton of sense for this award, right?
Sure. For sure. I mean, breakout year for Trevor Lawrence. I'm really curious to see what they get from Calvin Ridley, of course. Yeah, the Alabama receiver, long time off. He's still young, though. I mean, last year we were all laughing about, oh, look at, isn't it cute how Jacksonville, they overpaid for all these guys who weren't worth the prices they paid. And it's like, well, Christian Kirk was a fantasy value, and Zay Jones was a fantasy value, and Evan Engram was a fantasy value. And ETN, I still don't know why they don't throw the ball more to ETN, but you know, he clearly very quickly percolated to the top of their depth chart. And would they remind me of the shape of the Eagles, is that they have both a variety of options, but yet the tree is still narrow. They're not handing off to the fullback. They don't have like a fourth or fifth receiver getting in the way. They don't have a second tight end you have to worry about. Lawrence will run some. He will not run a ton, but he could, 5 to 6 rushing touchdowns is in his range of outcomes. I feel like most of these guys are pretty easy to rank for fantasy. I just don't know what to do with Ridley. I've had him at the top of my queue on a couple of drafts and haven't pulled the trigger on him. I don't know if I've just been too gun shy on that. I don't know. How do you rank a guy? How do you evaluate a player who's missed this much time and is on a new team, even though he certainly projects as the alpha here? It's not like there's other players here who aren't talented and everybody's already had a run through with this offense. So Ridley to me is a very difficult guy to rank, but yes, I'm very excited. I love obviously the way they ended. They make this late push to win the division, and then they beat the Chargers. Of course, there was chartering involved in that playoff game, but so they've had a taste of the playoffs, and it's just so great to, we know the league with the last couple of quarterback drafts, it's been, you know, we don't know so many of these guys if they can play or not. You know, some guys can run, they don't have receivers, some guys haven't gotten on the field, some guys like Mac Jones just don't seem to have any ceiling. I'm just glad we can sleep at night thinking, you know what, Trevor Lawrence is the player we thought he was. He's a star. He could be maybe an MVP candidate someday. You could easily see him in a Super Bowl someday. My problem with Jacksonville, problem's the wrong word. My conundrum with Jacksonville is I just don't know how to rank Calvin Ridley right now.
Totally. And I think he's like the biggest X factor on this team because, you know, I'd said a lot, like when the move happened in the middle of last season, I was like, I want to be cautiously optimistic about Calvin Ridley. And then you go back and watch him, even his 2021 season, like those first 5 games where he was with the Falcons, like that dude is just such a great route runner, such a good separator. He is exactly what the Jacksonville Jaguars of last year needed, like someone who's going to line up as a true X receiver. And, you know, he's not going to be a big body downfield ball winner, but he's going to just destroy press man coverage, consistently separate. They didn't have that guy last year. Obviously, the biggest thing is just like it's been a year and a half since we've seen him play football. That's such a huge risk. But I've really been more optimistic and less cautious of late, Scott. I'm really excited about Calvin Ridley just because I think he seems like he's fully dialed in. Like he's all the way in on football. He's all the way in on the Jaguars. He's been really excited about this move basically since it happened. And I mean, just it's hard to know where he's at. It's really impossible to know because it's been so long since we've seen him. But the last time we saw him, in 2021, he was the guy that like Jacksonville would theoretically need. So he can easily be an AJ Brown type of move. And you're right. Like I'm looking at the Eagles last year, 145 targets for AJ Brown, 136 targets for Devontae Smith, 69 targets for Dallas Goedert in 12 games. So, you know, keep that in mind. And then 51 targets for the third receiver who didn't have a very good year in Quez Watkins. That could easily be Calvin Ridley, somewhere around 140 targets. Christian Kirk, somewhere between like 120, 130. Dallas Goedert is the Evan Engram, right? Like he could have that. If Evan Engram has 60 to 70 type targets, I think that's good enough. And then Zay Jones, for all the good he was last year, you know, if he's like a 50 target player, I think that perfectly makes sense. And I bet the Jaguars throw more times overall than the Eagles did last year at 505 because they don't have a rushing quarterback, although Trevor Lawrence can make plays. And look, a lot of this comes back to Trevor Lawrence. Like if Calvin Ridley's still a really good player, and Trevor Lawrence takes the next step into being like a legit MVP candidate, I think they also have to be a finalist for this award too, because I also believe in the ecosystem that Doug Peterson has established there and everything that's going on. Scott had to say ecosystem at least once, Scott. So yeah, I think they belong in this discussion too.
And it's nice for once. I mean, Press Taylor took over the offensive coordinator job. He was the 5th guy in 5 years. Just every year they were putting on a new shirt. It's just nice to have some continuity there. Obviously, when you win a division, you win a playoff game, you're not going to fire a coordinator. And Taylor is a new enough name that he wasn't a hot head coaching candidate. But I'm just glad that Trevor Lawrence can go into the season with, we have Doug Peterson here. We have the offensive system, even though they're going to do different things with Ridley, it's not going to change as much. Where last year, it's almost like it was his second rookie season.
All right, so we are going to move into the NFC. Right now, I have the Dolphins, Ravens, and Jags penciled in as finalists. But let's see if we can get one of them off here and get an NFC team in. Let's start with the NFC East. We've got the Cowboys and the Giants. I think we can have, of these two teams, which one makes more sense to you as this year's Eagles? We know that the Giants were 9-7-1 last year. The Dallas Cowboys were 12-5. I think we can only pick really one of these teams. Which one do you want to pick?
It has to be the Cowboys because we have to speak to producer Cowboy Bias and just the Giants receiver room, man. I just still can't get behind it as far as maybe they can make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, but I just don't see enough ceiling to it. Grant, it's nice that Daniel Jones can run. I think we talked earlier about Barkley. I think he'll get solidified. He'll be fine. Brian Daboll's a really good coach, and just what he did with Daniel Jones deserves a parade, if not a pat on the back. But the Cowboys last year, Dak was hurt all year. They have. I love the way their receivers complement each other, and they do different things. And there's kind of a pecking order for them, but they're all gonna. I think they all have upsides and ceilings too. Michael Gallup is somebody I'm open-minded to drafting. I thought they made a really good deal for Cooks. Lamb can be the alpha. We'll see how Pollard does as a featured back. And who knows? I wouldn't put it past the Cowboys to bring back Ezekiel Elliott. And until Ezekiel Elliott's on a different roster, I'll still consider him a possible Cowboy. But you know, last year, Elliott was really efficient in short yardage. I mean, maybe if they get him to come back and say, look, you're going to punch in, you're going to be the Thunder, and you'll come in on third and one. You'll be the guy who scores the 12 touchdowns, but you'll only get maybe 8 to 12 touches a game. I actually wouldn't hate that on this roster. If I'm looking at this division, it has to be the Cowboys for me as far as fitting the suit we're trying to fit today.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I don't know that Dak is necessarily going to take another step as a player because I think he already kind of is established. But I like Dak. Like, I think he's established himself as a top 10 type quarterback. He could be better than he was last year simply because he could be healthy for an entire year and he could just have better. He was just very, I think, unlucky in terms of the interceptions last year. Sometimes he pushed it more than he should have, but a lot of those came in like high leverage situations, right? Or, you know, they banged off a receiver's hands in tight coverage. I don't think he's going to be throwing to guys like, you know, Noah Brown this year, right? Like, Noah Brown's obviously on the Texans, but Brandon Cooks is a perfect fit as a speed flanker. I think CeeDee Lamb is like, there's the elite wide receivers. And I think that for the next group, you start talking about like CeeDee Lamb is the first guy off the list. He's a top 10 receiver. He's a stud. And then Michael Gallup, I'm glad you brought him up. Like, I think Michael Gallup is just a really, really good X receiver in the league, you know, and if he can get back to the player he was from 2019 to 2021, I think that would be a perfect finishing touch to this receiver room. And defensively, look, they have one of the best players on the planet in Micah Parsons, like just a beautiful, wonderful football player in Micah Parsons, like a joy inspiring football player in Micah Parsons, and a great group around him as well with Dan Quinn as a defensive coordinator. So everything is kind of set up for the Cowboys to take a leap. We know how Colin feels. We know Colin is like, bro, put them in the group. Scott, do you think they make sense over either of these three teams that I have penciled in as finalists right now, Dolphins, Ravens, Jags?
I would put them in over the Dolphins.
Same. I'm with you. I also would put them in over the
I'll
Dolphins.
Say one other thing about Dallas, although it's hard to get a good price on Dallas because they're such a public team and they have fans all over the country, like unlike any other team, I think, in the NFL. But I'm curious to see what their odds are, division, NFC, or Super Bowl. This roster is so deep. I know you have to get past the Mike McCarthy problem, but hey, I mean, Mike McCarthy was really successful in Green Bay, even if it feels like maybe they left some stuff on the table. It's just unbelievable that team had Favre and Rodgers for so many years and didn't have more championship success, although it's hard to win championships. But the Dallas Cowboys will win a Super Bowl in this decade. I don't know when it's going to happen, but there's too much talent here.
Just want to point out, after a comment like that, which thank you, Scott, you made my day, my week, my life by saying that. So appreciate that.
Nobody's ever said that to me before.
I think what gets lost too in the conversation, and we did it here too, is like, oh, like, are they better than these AFC teams? The road for Dallas is a lot less treacherous than any of those AFC teams. They simply have to be better than the Eagles or beat the Eagles or the Niners really in a playoff game. The Niners, they have to prove that because that's been their arch nemesis. That's ended their season the last 2 years. I will say historically, Dak has played really, really well against the Eagles. That's a really good thing. He lit up 40 on them Christmas Eve. We didn't get a Jalen Hurts-Dak Prescott showdown last year. I'm very much excited to see that this year. That's all I'll say.
You know, that might be Dallas, Philadelphia. If you tell me like what game am I most excited to watch? I'm not sure when I'm sure they're probably on primetime. That might be the best rivalry in the NFL right now.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Like the fact that we didn't get to see that last year is a shame. Just because, hey, man, I mean, Gardner Minshew, God love him, but like it would have been great to see that matchup last year. The Cowboys and Eagles play on Sunday Night Football in Week 14. Now that I'm back on the East Coast, Scott, I'm in the same time zone as you. My ass will be staying up late for that one. That's for sure. Oh, my ass will be staying up late.
Come on. It's no big deal. Stay up for those games.
Yeah, right. Like maybe some of these other Sunday Night Football games I'll be dragging a little bit, but that one will be fun. And they also play Sunday, November 5th, Week 9 at 4:25. You know, Fox classic.
Yeah, which I'm sure that will be the featured game in that second window. It'll be one of those things where everybody's complaining about why are there only two or three games in the second half of the window, but everybody will be watching that one game.
All right, next one up here, NFC West. We got the Seattle Seahawks. Another team I really like for this group, Scott. Last year, they were 9-8. You know, they got overmatched by the 49ers eventually in the playoffs, although that game was a little closer than people remember in the first half. They made big additions in the offensive side of the football, in the draft. They bring in Jackson Smith-Njigba. They bring in Zach Charbonnet. They have a ton of young guys, like the core of this team that could take another step. They had Devon Witherspoon in the top five of the draft, but you know, they have some guys last year at cornerback that were really, really good. Tariq Woolen was awesome. Their offensive line could take a step. They have one of the best wide receiver duos in the NFL in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Geno, maybe doesn't look. I think if Geno has a fringe MVP season, I wouldn't be surprised by that either. So I like the Seahawks, but I don't know. Can we put them in ahead of the Cowboys, the Ravens, or the Jags? I think they at least belong. Maybe if they don't belong as a finalist, Scott, they're one of my honorable mentions. I love them for a potential this year's Eagles team.
They belong in this program for sure. They belong in this discussion. The thing with the Seahawks is, if these guys, for the most part, were to match what they did last year, I'd take it. Last year was the year to get the Seahawks, right? Because we didn't even know who the quarterback was going to be. Smith or Locke was a question, and I really dropped the ball on that. I think I should have put more stock in how well Smith played. He grossly outplayed Russell Wilson when they both played 2 years. And granted, you know, outplaying Russell Wilson lately has not been a really big deal, but Geno Smith was pretty darn good in 2021, and that maybe was signal for why he'd be good in 2022. The prices were deflated on Metcalf and Lockett, Lockett forever is beating his ADP. If all these guys do what they did last year, I think we'd all be happy. And I just don't know. You have a backfield where two guys are going to. This may be a case where maybe Seattle, they're better as a collective fantasy scoring enterprise, but it's spread out enough. Maybe Charbonnet steals enough from Walker, or Jigba's ready to play enough that he takes a little bit off Metcalf's plate or Lockett's plate. There isn't really a major factor at tight end. A few years ago, I thought Noah Fant was going to be a star. I don't feel that way anymore. He's a good NFL player, but whatever. He'll catch four or five touchdowns. Will Disley will catch three or four touchdowns, and people will complain about all four of them. I think Seattle's a good team. I just don't know. I think it's more of a, we're all hoping to make pars on these guys. I just don't see the birdie holes.
I think that's totally fair. I think I like the Seahawks better as a real life team than
yes, me too.
A fantasy team.
For sure. Well said.
You know, Frank was definitely trying to red pill me about the Seahawks, you know, winning the NFC West a couple of episodes ago. He took the 49ers, Scott, as this year's Denver Broncos, like the team that's really hyped up.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. 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 He was. And that does give me some pause, because as much as I like the 49ers and the setup is awesome, there's definitely some quarterback driven fragility.
That's the steakhouse problem, right? It's you get the great atmosphere, the great wait staff, the drink menu is awesome. The appetizers, the salads. It's like, is the steak any good? We don't know if the steak is any good in San Francisco. We don't.
Yeah, we don't even know if they're going to have all their cuts available, right? Like you could get there, you're coming on a Saturday night, you're feeling good, and you're like, the filet's out, sorry.
Or you're going to order the filet and they give you the T-bone. You know, we don't know who their quarterback on week one may not be their quarterback on week three, may not be their quarterback in week five.
Yeah, it's tough. And that gives me a lot of pause in not putting the Seahawks here, because I think they have a path, but yeah. I guess, how do you feel about Geno? Like, do you feel what you saw last year is enough to just pencil him in as a top 12 NFL quarterback, and like he's gonna roll back what he did last year, and maybe even if Smith and Jigba hits the ground running, if the offense is stable, like he could actually take another step and be sort of a fringe MVP conversation guy like Jalen Hurts was. Well, I mean, Jalen Hurts was like, he would have maybe potentially won the MVP, but you know what I mean?
It's really simple with Gino. He's in the circle of chess for me. And I think that and it's funny how, like, when you mentioned the Niners, like, you know, everything has gone wrong for Trey Lance that could go wrong. That was Geno Smith's career, right? I mean, he got punched by a teammate. Yeah. Who else? What other quarterback has had his career set back because one of his teammates punched him? I can't think of any, but I'm sure it's happened. Maybe it just wasn't reported that widely. But Geno Smith couldn't catch a break, and finally he has all the toys and he gets a spot. And also, you know, he's in Seattle, right, where it's not like the media pressure and they have a very passionate fan base, of course, but it's, you know, you can kind of settle into things and people let things breathe and they have stable coaching. Carroll's been there for a while. Geno Smith is in the circle of trust for me, and I will draft him proactively. It's not like I'm walking to my draft and going to get me some Geno Smith, but when there's going to be certain roster builds where you're going to wait a quarterback and he's going to be there and you'll be, oh wow, I just got a quarterback who I can tell myself a story that can produce as well as the guys who went three or four rounds earlier. Geno Smith is certainly a green light guy for me.
I don't want to put them in over the Ravens. I don't want to put them in over the Jags. I could hear a conversation about over the Cowboys, but Scott, do you think they're a top three finalist or no?
We're picking nits if they're over the Cowboys or not, but they're not going to be my overall pick. So my point would be to leave them out, but it's really close. If we went four deep, they'd be on it.
Same. Yeah, I think they're my top honorable mention team. And I think, yeah, it's kind of splitting hairs with Dallas, but I agree with you there. Let's talk about the last team here, because we're not going to talk about the NFC South, because literally no team qualifies. None of them had a winning record. And I mean, we've talked about the Falcons so much. On the
podcast. I apologize to the Falcons because they're such a fun team.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ceiling to that team, but man, the Saints, and I know we love Chris Olave, but the Saints just scare me. And the Buccaneers, obviously they're rebooting and all their receivers they're not on the back nine. They're all like the 15th hole at this point. I'm curious to see if Mike Evans can get to the Hall of Fame or not, but Carolina, they go all in for a quarterback, and who's he going to throw the ball to? I mean, really, Adam Thielen's the best thing you can come up with. Give Bryce Young a chance. That's 8 wins would go a long way in that division.
The Falcons were my pick for this year's Jaguars, which I think is a good.
Oh, I like that. That's
great.
Good.
Yeah. Great.
Great call by you, Matt.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Shout out to you.
Shout out to me. Bat. I beat it. I beat Dalton pretty hard on that one because he wanted to go for the Jets. So I pushed the Falcons on that one. But hey, I let Frank bully me into picking the 49ers as this year's Broncos. So I don't have that big of a backbone here. Last team we're going to talk about before voting on the finalists, the Detroit Lions. Scott, we know the hype for the Lions is really hard.
They're up there
week one. they're up in the season.
Good. I get a rant about this. Okay, look, I'm a transplant. I've lived in Michigan for 2 decades now. And do I get sad when the local teams lose? Pretty much no, although maybe Michigan hockey is the one exception to me. I'd rather the local teams be good. The Lions had a nice, plucky, oh, look, you know, that Dan Campbell, he's a good, really good soundbite. And, you know, Jared Goff's better than we thought. He's been to 2 Super Bowls, been to 3 Pro Bowls. And St. Brown, the sun god, is a really fun player. And, you know, Williams is now departed, of course. He's their spirit animal and all that stuff. They should not be in the NFL opening game of the season. That's absurd. They're and I know they could have made the playoffs last year if not for some questionable officiating in that Seattle game and everything. And then they went to Green Bay, and beating the Packers wasn't any unbelievable achievement. But I feel like everybody's just a little bit over their skis. They remind me of the Browns after the Baker Mayfield season when they went to the playoffs and everything. It's like, oh, the Browns, they could win the AFC and everything. Should the Lions really be the NFC North favorites? I think we're settled down a little bit on the Lions. They're a nice team. They're not going to be my top three here. I think they're going to get demolished in the opener. And it's going to be like, really? We've gone from, why do we have to watch the Lions every year on Thanksgiving, to let's watch them in the NFL opening game of the night? It just feels like a couple of steps have been skipped here.
I totally agree with you. I'm excited about the Lions this year, but I don't know that they should be. I don't think they belong in this group. I don't think there's an Eagles type leap for them. I think there's a leap for them, but a leap for them is getting into the playoffs. They didn't get into the playoffs last year in a watered down NFC. They didn't make it. I think that Jared Goff has sort of righted his career to being like a slightly above average quarterback. Like people were way, there was way too much Jared Goff shade when the Rams dumped him, you know, like yesterday's trash, right? Like that was tough. That was like too harsh on Goff, but there's definitely not a Jalen Hurts type of leap coming for Jared Goff. We know who Jared Goff is. And I love Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown, but St. Brown's like a specific type of receiver. He's a big slot who's not going to threaten defenses vertically. I want that guy on my team, you know, 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, the whole deal. Although now we're playing football like basically every day of the week. So I don't know that statement really means as much as it used to. But I said, like, when Jamison Williams is out, Scott, in the first 6 weeks of the season, who are they throwing to beyond 15 yards? You know, they draft a pass catching running back. You know, that's short area target stuff. They draft a tight end. I like Sam Laporta an awful lot, but like, is he going to hit the ground running day one? I don't know about that. He's another like after catch type of player. Typically, we don't see tight ends hit the ground running. You know, we're looking at like Josh Reynolds, Marvin Jones, you know, like these are nice players, but I think they still are the team I want DeAndre Hopkins to sign with, because I think they need a legit X receiver. I think they need a legit X receiver even when Jamison Williams plays for them. So they have enough questions on the side of the ball that we feel really good about the offense. There are definitely a lot more questions about the defense, but the side of the ball that we feel really good about has a lot of questions. And again, is still manned by a very like a good quarterback in Jared Goff, but not a guy that I think is about to take a leap in, you know, the second, third act of his career or whatever. So I'm with you mostly on this sentiment. All right, so that means our three finalists are the Dallas Cowboys, the Baltimore Ravens, the Jacksonville Jaguars in terms of this year's Philadelphia Eagles. So, Scott, I'll go first, and then you can rank them here. My rankings are number one, Jacksonville. They're my favorite pick for this. Number two, Baltimore Ravens. Number three, Dallas Cowboys. The reason I have Jacksonville at the top spot is pretty cut and dry, like Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence... I love Lamar Jackson, but I think Trevor Lawrence can reach a higher height than Lamar can. And yeah, you know, maybe I'm being too aggressive on Trevor, but I think the supporting cast is there. I think the head coach, like as much as I'm optimistic that Todd Monken changes things around for Baltimore, I've already seen Doug Peterson do that in Jacksonville. So I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy there, but I think they have a better shot to be this year's. And by the way, the Ravens still play in a division with the Bengals. Like, you know, that's a stumbling block. The AFC South is Jacksonville's to basically mow down. So they're my one team. Ravens two, Cowboys three. How do you put these in order of most to least likely to be this year's Eagles?
The Cowboys were definitely third. I thought the Ravens were a slam dunk right answer for number one. I think you made a really convincing case for Jacksonville. So I'm still going to rank Baltimore first, but it's closer than I thought it was 45 minutes ago when we started this. But it's just easier for me to tell myself a story that we go back. I remember last year we're like, well, how do we let all those people get those Kelce Mahomes teams? I wonder if we're looking and saying, how do we let all those people get Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews stacks? That was just unfair.
Totally. I love the Ravens this year. I'm so bullish on the Ravens offense and this receiver core, but it is still, you know, there's a lot of health questions. There's obviously questions with Ridley, but there's a lot of health questions with Baltimore. And like, it's a thing all these teams, this is the whole thing. It's a projection. It's a leap. So I think it's very, very close between Baltimore and Jacksonville. Our voting suggests that. So that means for the fourth episode in a row, Colin,
tiebreaker,
you get to break the tie. Who is this year's Eagles, the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Baltimore Ravens?
Speaking of the Eagles, we mentioned Doug Peterson. So his first year in Philly, they went 7-9. You know, Carson Wentz first kind of got an uneventful year. It was that next year, that second year, that everything came together. I know we're talking about this year's Eagles in terms of the 2022 Eagles, but look at the second year of Peterson in 2017. That Philly Eagles team took off, obviously won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. I think you know where I'm going with this. I'm going to go with Harmon here and the Jaguars. I think there's a leap there, and I can see it where... Like, I don't know. I could see a second-year leap more with Trevor Lawrence and Doug Peterson more than the unknown of Lamar throwing more than he's ever had in his life with the new OC. I think the Ravens will be good, but I think the Jaguars have an opportunity to be special, and that's why I think there will be this year's Eagles.
And with you guys saying that, I think kind of the implied assumption there is that Calvin Ridley is definitely at least meets his ADP, if not outkicks it.
Yeah. It's really easy to get excited about Calvin Ridley if you just go put the old Falcons tape on it. All right. That's going to do it for this podcast. Be sure to follow us both on Twitter. He's at Scott_Pianowski. I'm at Matt_BYB. If you're feeling like you really want to make my day, you can give us an updated review wherever you're listening to this podcast. We could use some new reviews. Let us know what you think of the CondoCast, my beautiful background here, the Summer Flip the Script series. Let us know what you think about the podcast if you love it. If you don't love it, just close out this show and, you know, pretend you don't even know who I am. Be sure to join us on Thursday as Dalton Del Don joins me for the next installment of the Flip the Script series. Who is this year's Josh Jacobs? We dive into the best dark horse running backs who could finish top five in fantasy rankings this season. Also, we're going to end that show with one of the best interviews in the entire NFL. It's 49ers tight end George Kittle. He's going to join the podcast. May have already done that interview. It's awesome. Definitely make sure you listen to it. Until then, we're out.